The malachite green sea merged with the peridot green water flowing through the channel of the large lagoon that nestled between the volcanic lava cliffs of Raoul Island. From the sea, only a tiny section of the lagoon could be seen through the chasm, whose cliffs rose on each side of the channel. It was like peering through a telescope into a distant, narrow slit. High atop the west side of the entrance, more than 300 feet above the surf, a small shack built of palm fronds perched dangerously close to the edge. The native look was a facade. A security guard sat inside a comfortable little house, studying the vast expanse of ocean with a large pair of binoculars mounted on a stand. He swung the binoculars and focused on the strangest-looking yacht he had ever seen, cutting through the sun-danced water at what he guessed as close to 40 knots. On the upper open deck, two people, a man and a woman, lounged in a jacuzzi, drinking out of tall glasses and laughing. All windows were tinted, and he could not see any suggestion of other crew members or passengers. He turned to the radio, switched on the transmitter, and began speaking.
"This is Pirate. I have a private yacht approaching from the northeast."
"Any sign of weapons or armed personnel?"
replied a voice like sandpaper.
"None."
"She doesn't look threatening?"
asked the rough voice.
"Not unless you consider two naked people in a jacuzzi threatening."
He gazed at the boat through the glasses again, watching until it became a tiny speck in the distance. Then he called over the radio.
"This is Pirate. The yacht is gone. It appears as if she dropped anchor in the open lagoon on the south end of Macaulay Island."
"Then she's harmless," said the rough voice. "Watch your lights after dark, and make sure she stays put."
Misty and Giordino were not naked in the hot tub. They were wearing swimsuits provided by Cussler. They were, however, sipping rum Collinses as the boat cruised under the steep palisades of Raoul Island. Cussler and Pitt were not as lucky. The old man sat at the helm station with a chart in his lap, eyeing the depth sounder and examining the bottom coral reefs that could have sliced the Periwinkle's twin hulls like razor blades through cardboard. Pitt lay sweating under a pile of pillows and towels on the lower lounge deck, videotaping the guardhouse at the top of the cliffs overlooking the channel entrance. Once the yacht was anchored, they all settled into the main salon and gazed at the monitor while Pitt played the tape on the VCR. The telephoto lens on the camera, combined with the video enhancement, revealed the guard peering at them through a pair of huge binoculars. Added to the video was the soundtrack of the conversation between the guard and his colleague, as recorded by Cussler's high-tech communication system.
"We fool them," said Misty.
"What happens now?" Cussler asked.
"As soon as it's dark, we build a small raft and attach lights on it so it looks like a boat lit up from a distance. Then we sail back under cover of the cliffs near the channel, just out of sight of the guard. Then Al and I will go in the water and take a swim up the channel to the lagoon to have a look around. If we're right, and the deep encounter is hidden under camouflage netting, we sneak aboard, overpower the hijackers, free our friends, and sail off into the blue." Misty looked dumbstruck.
"You can't be serious. The two of you going up against 50 or more armed hijackers? That's the craziest scheme I've ever heard."
Pitt shrugged. "I admit I may have oversimplified things just a shade, but I really don't see any other way of handling the job."
"You'll have a long swim," said Cussler. "I have a dive thruster that will pull you through the water. You can use it to propel you both in tandem."
Beginning just after sunset, it took the three men 2 hours to tie several palm tree trunks together into a raft and then construct a rough outline of the Periwinkle with framing scrounged from driftwood. For a finishing touch, a small battery was connected to a string of lights on the framework. Then the raft was anchored on the shore side of the yacht.
"It ain't pretty," said Giordino, "but it should fool the security guard sitting in his little hovel 5 miles away."
Cussler shifted the lights to the raft and threw the yacht into darkness.
He steered toward Raoul Island by radar, watching carefully to see if the boat was stirring up any phosphorescence in her wake.
"I'll bring us inside the outcropping of rocks just in front of the channel," he explained. "From there, you'll have to rely on the thruster."
Pitt and Giordino dropped into the warm, ink-black water with only a slight splash and swam a short distance from the boat. After stroking for several minutes, they paused and looked back. Once past 100 feet, the periwinkle became invisible. Giordino wrapped his arms around Pitt's legs and hung on as the thruster was switched on and the jets began pulling them through the water at nearly 3 knots. In less than 15 minutes, they passed under the high cliffs into the open lagoon. Pitt angled the thruster off to the side of the beach and kept the power on until he could feel sand beneath his feet. Only then did he shut it down. There was no indication of inhabited structures on the beach, but the lagoon was far from deserted. 2 vessels lay moored side by side in the middle. Leaving the thruster on the beach, they swam toward the larger of the 2 ships. She was anchored with her bow facing into the channel.